DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by George Weigel, the distinguished senior fellow of Washington's Ethics and Public Policy Center. He is one of the world's leading authorities on the Catholic Church. He's also the author of more than 20 books, including the world-renowned two-volume biography of Pope John Paul II, Witness to Hope, and The End and the Beginning. With George Weigel, we go inside the pages of Evangelical Catholicism, Deep Reform in the 21st Century Church, published by Basic Books. The Catholic Church is on the threshold of a bold new era in its 2,000-year history. As the curtain comes down on the Church defined by the 16th century Counter-Reformation, the curtain is rising on the evangelical Catholicism of the third millennium, a way of being Catholic that comes from over a century of Catholic reform, a mission-centered renewal honed by the Second Vatican Council and given compelling expression by Blessed John Paul II and Pope Benedict XVI. The gospel-centered, evangelical Catholicism of the future will send all the people of the Church into mission territory every day, a territory increasingly defined in the West by spiritual boredom and aggressive secularism. Confronting both these cultural challenges and shadows cast by recent Catholic history, evangelical Catholicism unapologetically proclaims the gospel of Jesus Christ as the truth of the world. It also molds disciples who witness to faith, hope, and love by the quality of their lives and the nobility of their aspirations. Thus, the Catholicism of the 21st century and beyond will be a culture-forming counterculture, offering all men and women of goodwill a deeply humane alternative to the soul-stifling self-absorption of post-modernity. Drawing on 30 years of experience throughout the Catholic world, from its humblest parishes to its highest levels of authority, George Weigel proposes a deepening of faith-based, mission-driven Catholic reform that touches every facet of Catholic life, from the episcopate and the papacy to the priesthood and consecrated life. From the renewal of the lay vocation in the world to the redefinition of the Church's engagement with public life, from the liturgy to the Church's intellectual life. Lay Catholics and clergy alike should welcome the challenge of this unique moment in the Church's history. Mediocrity is not an option, and all Catholics, no matter what their station in life, are called to live the evangelical vocation into which they were baptized, without compromise, but with joy, courage, and confidence that comes from living this side of the resurrection. We now begin our discussion with George Weigel. George, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
Remarkable, if God's divine timing is everything, the coming of your book at this moment, wow.
Well, thank you, Chris. I wrote Evangelical Catholicism with an eye towards the Church after Benedict XVI. I didn't quite realize that the Church after Benedict XVI would begin 3 weeks after the book was published. But I'm happy to have laid out what I think is a roadmap into the future. And I hope it'll be part of the discussion in Rome and elsewhere over the next month as the Church sorts out its future leadership with prayer and reflection.
If we could take chapter 12 and copy it and hand it to each member of the College of Cardinals as they're walking through the door of the Sistine Chapel, I think that would go a long way in helping sort this out.
Well, their addresses are publicly available, so feel free to Xerox away and write. I hope that the entire book and the idea that we are at a hinge moment in Catholic history, that the Church is turning into a new evangelical future, is widely understood. It should be after the past two pontificates, both John Paul II and Benedict XVI, have use the phrase the new evangelization consistently. So it should be pretty clear that we are at the end of one phase of two millennia of Catholic history and entering a new, challenging, but ultimately very exciting phase.
It's important for the listener to understand that we have to have a distinction between the Counter-Reformation Church and the Evangelical Catholic Church. And that Counter-Reformation Church began to come to an end at the beginning of this tremendous pontificate of Pope Leo XIII.
Yeah, I think the phase of the Church that we're entering now began over 120 years ago. When Leo XIII says to the modern world, we have a proposal to make. That set in motion a host of Catholic reform movements, liturgical, theological, biblical, historical, social action, etc. Those movements created the context for the Second Vatican Council. The Council has now been given an authoritative interpretation by John Paul II and Benedict XVI, and they focused that interpretation through the prism of the new evangelization. And the key moment in this, perhaps, was the apostolic letter at the end of the Great Jubilee of 2000, entering the new millennium, Novo Millennio in Eunte, which John Paul II picked up the phrase from really last Sunday's Gospel. Mm-hmm. Luke chapter 5, where the Lord tells the disciples, put out into the deep for a catch. And that's his metaphor for the Church of the New Evangelization. We are to leave the shallow waters of institutional maintenance and go out and convert the world.
Gospel reveals, as opposed to the Church teaches, because it is so central to have that biblical revelation as the heart of who we are as Catholics.
Yeah, and it's also prudent in the sense that the phrase, the Church teaches, therefore you must do X, sets off every possible alarm bell in the heads of people today. Whereas the phrase, the Gospel reveals, or the Gospel teaches, or the Gospel proposes, may not immediately convert people, but it might get a conversation started, and that's really what we're looking for right now, is an openness to the proposal.
As you put in the book, there has been this slow, steady retrieval of the biblical idea of the office of Peter, and that is, we're going to be looking at that over the next, 6-7 weeks, and helping people understand that that's the moment we're in right now.
Well, I hope it's not 6-7 weeks. I hope this gets sorted out within a month. I think that would be good for the Church and good for the world. But the world's expectations of the papacy have changed dramatically, and so have the Church's expectations. This is in considerable part due to John Paul II. Who, as one writer famously put it, was not a pope from Poland, he was a pope from Galilee. He was a missionary evangelist, and the world responded to that in a very powerful way. So the pope as CEO of Catholic Church, Inc. is not a model that moves many people's hearts today. And I think that will be well understood going into this conclave.
It was tremendous when, I have to tell you personally, I was reading chapter 12 on the papacy and the challenge of the reform of that when the announcement was made that shocked, we can say the entire world, can't we, that Pope Benedict would be resigning.
He really did pull a huge surprise on everybody. I don't think people who were paying close attention were completely shocked in the sense that the Pope himself had indicated on several previous occasions that this is a real-life possibility. I think the timing was surprising. But when you think about it, the timing a little bit more, the timing is actually quite appropriate. We begin Lent tomorrow. This process will unfold during the most reflective part of the liturgical year. when we all re-enter, so to speak, the catechumenate and examine our consciences as to what kind of disciples we've been the past year, how many people we have introduced to friendship with Christ. And that's not a bad moment in which to choose a new leader for the church.
It was his reasons for leaving that was so compelling, and in what he felt the pontificate needed to be for the people of God. And when you read that whole section in your book about the 21st century Pope, he was looking at that saying, I can no longer fulfill those requirements.
Yeah, I think he understood that the likely future was one of increasing incapacity, and he was not prepared to remain on stage, simply to remain on stage. So we've had really two great examples here. We've had John Paul II showing us how to die nobly, and we've had Benedict XVI showing us how to accept the burdens of age gracefully and with humility and gratitude to God for a long life.
The work of the College of Cardinals now, as you have said, needs to be to discern the papacy, who will be coming forward, as opposed to looking at a job description. Am I articulating that properly?
Well, I think one looks to the qualities of a man first. Is this a man of God? Is this a man of radical conversion to Christ? Is this a man of prayer? Is this a man who can bear the really dramatic burden of the papacy, where in some sense you carry the whole church on your back without being crushed by the burden? Then, you know, you want somebody, it seems to me, with the capacity to propose the gospel, to proclaim the gospel with real power and effect. You want somebody who's got language skills in a multilingual church. You want somebody who will either straighten out the bureaucracy in Rome or find somebody to straighten it out for him. Mm-hmm. So that the Vatican civil service becomes the Vatican offices become instruments of the Pope and not impediments to the Pope's mission, as they have too often been in the recent past. That's a lot of qualities to look for in one person. But the basic test is reading the radical character of a man's discipleship.
You've said that he needs to be a man of deep faith, one that has confidence in the symphony of truth. And that's a word we've heard a lot lately, but we need to really understand what truth is, don't we, as a people?
Well, we have a problem in that we live in a culture which may acknowledge your truth and my truth, but isn't prepared to say that anything is the truth. The way we proclaim the truth, I think, is to manifest it in the quality of Christian lives, the compassion of Christian witness. We also have to get into arguments, and it's very helpful to have a pope who knows how to teach the truths of the church in a way that the yes of Catholic faith comes to the forefront. The church these days has to say no to a lot of things, but each of those no's is based on a yes, and we need to make that yes ever more clear.
Mm. He needs to be, as you said, someone who is a man of human resilience, and because there is this crushing burden of the papacy, but a lot of people are saying, in what we're hearing now in the media, because the schedule of the Pope is so active, he couldn't keep up. But it's more than that, isn't it?
No, this is, you know, usual media nonsense. The schedule is a heavy one, but the Pope can adjust the schedule as he likes. The real burden of this office is that you know everything, or you know a lot of things. And the church is a church of sinners as well as a church of great possibilities. The Pope has to see the world in macrocosm as well as in the microcosm of individual suffering and struggle with faith. And it takes a man of a very robust faith himself to carry the church without being crushed by the church.
Mm. And it also takes courage. Courage when you talk about those two unfortunate poles that have maybe even more that we've kind of splintered off into, to not just, as you said, not just necessarily to be a martyr physically, but to be a disciplinarian. And that's, you know, we don't like to hear that word disciplinarian in America at the very least.
Well, the Pope is not the Catholic Church isn't a high school, and the Pope isn't the prefect of discipline. Mm-hmm. Local bishops have the primary responsibility for Catholic identity, the integrity of Catholic institutions, the proper celebration of the liturgy, etc. What the Pope has to make clear, and what I think should be clear, although some people just seem to take forever to get this, is that there are some things in the Catholic Church that are simply not going to change. They're part of the essential constitution of the Church. And it's a waste of time to, speculate about changing things that are unchangeable. The other thing that I think, Chris, though, we always have to make clear is that mm-hmm. the parts of the Catholic world that are growing are the parts of the Catholic world that have embraced the fullness of faith, the symphony of truth, enthusiastically. The parts of the church that are dying are the places that have embraced Catholic light. Catholic light does not have a future. The cardinals, I think, will understand that. And anyone who imagines that the next pope is going to be a Catholic light pope is really imagining a phantasm, I think.
Well, you're about to jet off once again to be a witness to history in an extraordinary way. And Evangelical Catholicism, I think, is the book that all of us should be entering into and pondering during this period of Lent and this extraordinary time in the life of our church, George.
Well, thank you very much. And the more you could do to spread the word of this book, which is available everywhere as well as online through the online bookstores, I will be very grateful indeed. And I hope it's good for the church. I hope it's good for the mission of the church. I hope it's good for the new evangelization. And I'm very grateful for your time this morning.
Any final thoughts for us as far as the closing on this man that you've written about and who has stepped up to do something extraordinary?
Let's be grateful for his depth of faith, for his Christian witness, for his humility, and let's pray that we have a good result over the next month.
George Weichel, thank you so much for your time. God bless you in your travels.
Thanks, Chris. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. With George Weichel, we've gone inside the pages of Evangelical Catholicism, Deep Reform in the 21st Century Church. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to eppc.org, the website for the Ethics and Public Policy Center, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of DiscerningHearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join us next time for Inside the Pages, Insights from Today's Most Compelling Authors.